It was about 11 at night, and it was very dark, and they just stayed right on my bumper all the way down to right here, and they flipped their lights on, and then I pulled over. And they are blacked out, you know, there's no insignia, but just the little lights on there. I could tell, oh, this must be the police. So then they get out of the car, and they look like the SWAT team. They're in all black. The only thing you can see is their eyes through a ski mask. And the only thing that identifies them as any type of officer is this little thing that says agent and then a number after it. So I'm like, who are these people? I thought, am I getting robbed? Like, what's going on?
You say you were afraid you were being robbed. Do you feel like you were?
I feel like I did get robbed, yes.
That's Katie Baggett, and the officers who pulled her over that night were from the tiny town of Brookside, Alabama. Her offense? They said they couldn't see the light over her license plate from 50 feet away. The tag light worked, but it was stormy and visibility was poor. Didn't matter. They ran her license and found out it was suspended. They towed her car. She never got it back. In 2020, police towed 789 from a town of just over 1,200 people. We were standing in front of a junkyard off Interstate 22, just outside Birmingham, Alabama, in the exact spot where she was pulled over. She was sharing her story with reporters from AL.com, who won the 2023 Pulitzer Prize in Local Reporting, and Pulitzer Board co-chair Neil Brown, president of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies. The AL.com team of John Archibald, Ashley Remkes, Ramsey Archibald, and Challen Stevens won the Pulitzer for exposing how Brookside police preyed on residents to inflate revenue, which soared 640% over the two-year period from 2018 to 2020 to make up almost half of the city's total revenue. Their coverage prompted the resignation of the police chief, the resignation or dismissal of most of the force, four new laws, and a state audit. Welcome to Pulitzer on the Road, bringing you closer to Pulitzer-winning work through discussions between Pulitzer judges and winners. I'm your guide, Nicole Carroll, a Pulitzer board member and professor of practice at the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Arizona State University. Each spring, the board meets in Pulitzer Hall at Columbia University in New York to choose the winners. The discussion is rich and insightful. This podcast is designed to bring a similarly thought-provoking experience to you. In this podcast, we travel back to Brookside with John and Ashley, the journalist with AL.com.
When did you first think about Brookside and what became your main story?
Well, I'm going to back up just a little bit to how we got into this in the first place. Because there was a reporter here who got a job at the LA Times, and he had, prior to his leaving, he had gotten a grant from Columbia to do a report on criminalization of poverty. Somebody had to do this story. We both felt strongly about criminalization of poverty, so we said, well, hell, we'll do it. And so for 3 months, we sat around thinking, what the f*** have we gotten ourselves into? Because, you know, I love this topic. It's really important to me, but it's really hard to make people care about. And how are we going to show this cycle of fines and fees in a way that people don't just write them off as somebody who was doing something that they shouldn't have been doing? They got what they deserved because they really don't understand the cycle. And so we set out to find what we like to think of as the Rosetta Stone that would help people understand criminalization of poverty. I remember talking to this one person, Carla Crowder, who runs a place called Alabama Appleseed, which does a lot of prison work and such. She said, well, you know, I don't know what's going on in Brookside, but something is. And I went back and started looking up lawsuits from Brookside. And deep in one lawsuit and attachments was the audit report from Brookside. Any reporter out there knows that feeling when you're going through documents or something and you see that thing that crystallizes everything and the hair on the back of your neck stands up and you say, damn, I got something here. It was that moment.
What did you see?
I saw the numbers that will forever be in my head, that over the course of this two-year period, the amount of fines and fees came up 640%, that 49% of the budget of this town was funded by pulling people over and fining them. And a lot of states had passed laws to prevent that. And 49% was insane. And Ashley, who is a social media sleuth, began to find all these things.
I mean, you could see it. It's not special to Brookside, but it's, you know, shaming people. It's bragging about arrests and things that change people's lives. And you could see the officers, right? They don't identify themselves. They're wearing all black. You can only see their eyes. The vehicles are blacked out. And you could see it on their social media page. Like, they weren't hiding these things. I mean, there were pictures of officers, you know, wearing the all black or, you know, wearing like a bandana over their face. And it made you think, like, is this like highway pirates?
The town reported just 55 serious crimes to the state in the 8 years between 2011 and 2018. None of them homicide or rape. But in 2018, it began to build a force, with 13 full-time officers and two reserves at the time of the story, to patrol its 6 miles of roads and 1.5 miles of jurisdiction on Interstate 22. At the time, city officials said they were concerned about slow response times from the county and drug activity in the area. They hired an aggressive new chief, Mike Jones. He acquired 3 military surplus vehicles. One residence, called the Tank, black SUVs lined the parking lot. They had 2 drug-sniffing dogs. One was named Cash. By 2020, John reported, Brookside made more misdemeanor arrests than it had residents. He came out to Brookside on December 2nd, 2021, to watch the court proceedings. The city holds court just once a month, and with the increase in citations and COVID distancing requirements, the line stretched far into the parking lot. Police had to direct traffic. At the courthouse, John was talking to people in line when Chief Mike Jones walked up.
They proceeded to tell me how happy they were that I was here because it was such a good news story. It was a good news story on how they were cleaning this place up and turning it into a real police department and this. And everything the chief said, the mayor just nodded the whole time. I'll never forget. And there are these moments when you're reporting a story when you know something's significant. And I said, you know, it's been a 640% increase in fines and fees over the last 2 years. It's 50% of the budget. And he said, yeah, it should be more.
The chief said that?
Essentially, if we were working harder, it would be more. And at that moment, it was like, okay. And then I asked for, you know, a lot more documentation, and they sent it as, you know, sort of justification for what they were doing. And that's when all of these numbers began to fall into place. So they essentially just verified everything we'd been hearing.
John had what he needed for the first story. It was published on January 19th, 2022, and the community erupted. In the days that followed, Chief Jones resigned, and state leaders from both parties called for investigations. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth, a Republican, vowed, quote, "We're going to get something done on it. I promise you that," end quote. A state legislator and the Jefferson County Sheriff had a Brookside public meeting on February 2nd. 31 people came forward to tell their stories. Here are just a few.
From that day forward, I got followed by the police every day. I got off work. Off the freeway, home, literally every day. When an officer pulled me out of my car still been dry. And it was because I had a new tag and I had just bought my car the day before.
And he wrote me a ticket, pulled me over, wrote me a ticket for move over law. And I tried to explain to him, you can't move over when there's an 18-wheeler next to you.
I got pulled over 5 times with my tag. I had just purchased a vehicle from my mother. And I had 18 days illegal. I got pulled over 5 times within 4 days. Mm. 2 times by the same police officer. The ticket's $25. The court fee for $275.
Cost $300.
On a $25 ticket. I didn't have the money. I live in a mobile home park. Okay, guys, I don't live there anymore. But I don't have the money. I'm struggling. Okay?
All of us.
My husband said, can I get on a payment plan? Officer Jones grabbed him by the arm, drug him to the clerk, and said, you need to pay it or you're going to get 30 days in jail.
I just want to see justice for me, my husband, and everybody in this room. Because they're unfair. They abuse their authority. They don't care about nobody's life in this room but their own and their families. We all need help.
Police departments are policing for profit, and it has to stop now. It's not a black thing. It's not a white thing.
No, it's not.
It's not a Latino thing. It's a people thing.
Amen.
And we the people will put our elected officials on notice. If you don't do something,
we're going to do it.
And God bless you and keep you.
God bless you and keep you. You stay with the Lord. You get you.
Brookside's town square is the municipal center. The police station, the mayor's office, and the courthouse share a building. The community center, post office, and the water and fire departments fan out around it. We asked the new police chief, Henry Irby, if he would talk to us for this podcast. He turned us down, saying he can't comment because of ongoing litigation. 15 lawsuits have been filed against the city or its police officers. And while a few have been settled, most remain active. We reached out to lawyers for former Chief Mike Jones and the owner of Jets Towing, which hauled the cars. Neither responded. Brookside City Prosecutor Mark Parnell and former Municipal Judge Jim Wooten also did not respond. We asked if we could record our podcast inside one of the city buildings. Again, we were told no. So we were speaking with John and Ashley in the parking lot outside the police station, a giant flag flapping with each gust of wind. Just up the road is the Dollar General. We headed that way next.
So tell us a little bit about Brookside. We're walking up to the Dollar General, and I think I read in your story this may be the only commercial enterprise in town.
There's three septic tanks. Cleaning companies, but the Dollar General's the place where people go to shop here, and it's, you know, within 50 feet of the police department, 100 feet of the post office and the fire department. It's a little town square, and that's about all there is here. Brookside's a town of, at least when the story is written, is a town of 1,253 people, largely white, but much more diverse than it was in the previous census, and pretty poor. It's an old coal mining town. It's fallen on some pretty hard times, and it's lost a lot of population over the years.
I had never heard of Brookside.
Nobody goes through Brookside, you know? I mean, 22 is a pretty recent addition, and you can see now they're just building gas stations up there on the exit. And municipalities in Alabama are prohibited from giving speeding tickets on the interstate because a state legislator got ticketed twice on an interstate and created that rule.
Now, that's all politics is local, baby. I love it.
Yeah, but it was known for this, the Russian food festival, if anything, and most people didn't know anything about it. I've come to learn that it was considered a speed trap for a long time. But you know, prior to this, prior to 2018, it was a one-man police department. You know, it was literally, you know, one guy in a traditional, you know, Ford LTD kind of cop car riding around, mostly taking care of stray dogs and giving some tickets, but nothing like this.
Tasha Bishop works at the Dollar General. She had come outside to see what we were doing in the parking lot. We told her we were revisiting AL.com's Pulitzer Prize winning work on Brookside. Did she have a story to tell? She said she was pulled over many times. Once, she said, her car was towed when she had her kids, and they had to walk.
You guys, this is Tasha.
Hi, Tasha.
Hey, Tasha. Are you just shopping here?
Oh, I work here.
You work here? So this is Tasha. This is John and Ashley. Hi. They're reporters at AL.com. And this is Rob and Neil and Anna.
Hi, I'm Neil.
Just a crowd here. But I was just talking to Tasha. She works here, and she's willing to talk to us just a little bit. And so thank you so much.
You're
because
welcome.
She has a unique perspective.
How long have you lived in Brookside?
10 years.
Yeah, so you've seen the kind
I've
of...
I've seen a lot, yeah.
You've seen a lot.
I have seen
How
a
long
lot.
Have you worked at the Dollar General?
It's about 4 months now here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is this a little bit of the center of town? I mean, not...
Yeah, it's it's the center of attention in town. It's the big Walmart, so to speak.
I got you. Have you ever been pulled over by Brookside Police?
A lot.
Really?
A lot. A whole lot. I wasn't the only one that was targeted. The housing community was extremely targeted. Extremely. Like, you're not 5 feet over the tracks, and if you could go there, you could see a little area that is ducked off, that is behind a wooded area. It's like a little road. And you could sit there at nighttime with the cars being black and matte. You don't see it. I'm coming across those tracks, and I have to, at the time I was working at Walmart, I have to be to work at 4 a.m. So yeah, I'm leaving out about 2:30, 3:00 a.m. to get to work. You're coming across the tracks at me, flying. All I see is lights in the back. Where did you come from? How am I speeding from here to the exit of this parking lot? How much speeding are you gonna do? You gotta make a stop at the end of this parking lot because there's a stop sign. You pulled my car, my kids in the car, and you made me and my children walk. Yeah, because of my insurance was lapsed 2 days. Not saying you're supposed to give me a slap on the wrist or something like that, but seriously, 2 days and you're gonna make me and my kids walk? You ruined a lot of people's lives. And I've been out here 10 years. So since we got the new chief sergeants and the new officers, everything has been smooth. They do their job, you know. If you're speeding coming through here, hey, it's likewise, they're gonna pull you off. I'm not gonna lie, I came through here getting it. And like I said, fair is fair. We all have to follow the law. It's part of the adult rules as well as the children's rules. But targeting and doing things to people that is not necessary, I found it evil and just mean. We didn't have that type of money to hire lawyers, but we did call it Attorney Affairs. We did start that ball to rolling.
How much does it cost you dollars-wise, would you say? I mean, you can see if you can figure out the ones where, like, well, maybe you had it coming.
Oh, God. When you get your vehicle towed, for whatever reasons they feel like they want to tow it, there has never been a set amount.
Never the same.
Never the same. Never the same. It will range from 150, 200, 225. I've even paid 325 before. That was the last time I got towed. That was literally the last time. And I made it clear, you won't tow my truck again.
Did you feel helpless?
Who, me?
Well, yeah, when they're...
At that time, yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, at this point, I'm a single mother with 6 kids and my back is against the wall, so what am I to do? I mean, look around. You see where we live at. You need a car. I don't care if you got a scooter or a bike. You need something. But as a mother, you need your vehicle.
You know, I talked to a guy yesterday. We were speaking to a long timer here. This was how a lot of stuff was happening to him. And he said it, he didn't really realize it was happening to other people. Did you know that it was happening to other people as well?
And it's crazy because you don't realize it. I had no idea that they were targeting as many people until you go to court. It was unreal that we all had the identical story.
Katie Baggett, who you heard from earlier, is one of those with a similar story. It was late at night, dark. The unmarked police cars were matte black. The reason she was pulled over was questionable. They said her license plate light wasn't visible 50 feet away on a stormy night. They found her license was suspended, so they took her minivan.
Did you know what was going to happen?
Or no.
What was your next move once you got home?
Well, it was like midnight by that time, so my next move was to pass out. But the next day, I tried to call the courthouse and find out where my car was, and they said that they couldn't tell me over the phone. I had to come up there and pay like $200 and something. They implied that the money was just to find out where my car was.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my car was probably worth less than $800, and I just figured I can't afford to spend that because I gotta take Ubers back and forth to work until I die, basically. I noticed that the people that were interviewed and the people that I saw on the news and things like that, they were all like families or like poor people and the worst people that you can target. But they knew, and I think it was kind of sinister, they knew that we would not fight. We wouldn't get our cars back because we wouldn't have the money.
We asked Katie if we could see where she lived in Brookside at the time of the ticket. It was less than a mile from where she was pulled over. While we were interviewing her in her old cul-de-sac, her former neighbor came out and said drivers who were stopped must have been doing something wrong.
So how do you feel now? I mean, time is healing it a little, huh? No?
I'm still not financially recovered, but time does heal. The storm provides, that's what I say. Y'all are doing the good work. I'm thankful for all of it, honestly, because it's one thing that we can say we don't suck at. It's like speaking up for ourselves, you know, as Alabama, I mean.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Takes guts. You know, there's still a lot of lawsuits pending. A lot of people still trying to get something back.
Good. I really hope that I see other municipalities going through the same thing and that it's a change across the board. I would love for that to happen, for them to understand that the people do have power. You can't just walk all over us. Hey, how are you? We're doing a little podcast interview.
A what?
Podcast interview.
Oh. I just asked her to show us where she used to live, so we came in into your cul-de-sac to interrupt the neighborhood.
Lovely little street.
What's the podcast for?
It's about all the stuff that happened with Brookside and the lawsuits and all of that stuff.
We're with the Pulitzer Prizes, and these folks were honored for that work.
Yeah, there's a lot of mixed feeling about that, right? The people that are complaining about it are the people that did bad stuff.
Maybe.
I don't appreciate this being brought into my neighborhood.
We appreciate that perspective very much.
Yeah, y'all might want to look more into it, because again, the only people that ever get in trouble are the people that actually do drugs and stuff, so. Lived here 14 years, never had an issue. Never been pulled over. I don't go over the speed limit. I stop at the four-way at the stop sign. Don't do drugs. Respected member of the community, and I don't have any problems with them, so.
Well, that's an interesting...
Isn't that a reminder? We were almost just talking about that this town is still very on edge about things.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of disagreement over what's needed here, I guess.
Right.
And I guess that may have been what allowed a lot of this to, you know, sort of take off in the first place.
We had one more stop on our tour of this story, Jet's Towing, a tow yard about 10 minutes outside of Brookside in Adamsville. It's a little hard to find. You've got to go down a gravel back street, and there's very little signage.
So we're out in front of Jet's Towing, where there's a metal green fence, and behind it are a bunch of cars, obviously. It's just where they hold the cars. There's a sign here. John, why don't you read the sign?
Wrecker fees are additional to release fees. Cash only. No credit cards, no checks.
So how does Jets figure in?
I mean, the place is great in the sense that it looks like just what it is, which is a sort of a shadowy figure in this story, but one that's impacted a ton of people. A lot of people go get stopped for anything from no insurance to charges of all description and have their car towed. And many of the stories that people tell are in the difficulty and the expense of trying to get those cars back. And so they go to the county, they go to Brookside. Brookside would charge them an escalating amount of money from less than 200 all the way up to close to 300 for releasing the car. And they'd send them down to Jet's Wrecker, which would tell them that those release fees don't get your car back. They just get you here. And to get your car back, we'll have to charge you another few hundred dollars. And it is a rate that changes depending on the person, depending on the time. But people would have to search different locations for their cars, pay exorbitant fees, and they really felt like that they were being cheated. the city and the town and the police department made a decision that towing was big business, because in more than one occasion they decided to raise their rates of release fees. So, hey, we can make a lot of money just by raising the amount of money we charge people to go tell them that they have to get it from Jets, which ended up in over $200. And at the same time, we're told that the rates of wrecker fees went up during the same period of time. That combined with the fact that, you know, in this two-year period, we had a 1,400% increase in tows. And as you said, you know, that's more than, you know, two a day in this tiny town. So very clearly, as the fines and fees began to provide more and more of the town revenue, towing became an integral part of it.
There were some folks who said the wrecker was on the scene almost as fast as the Brookside Police Department. Did you hear a fair bit of that?
Yeah, there were losses to that effect as well. It said that they were pulled over, and by the time they stopped, that the wrecker from Jets Towing pulled in at the exact same time as the police, meaning that they knew they were going to tow that car from the minute they turned that light on.
Did you ever talk to Jets?
I did talk to Jets, and Jets has steadfastly declined comment on the story.
I mean, we were doing the math, right? They went from towing a car a week to two a day, essentially, on average, right? So
let's just in a town of 1,253 people.
Well, what I'm thinking is so you lost your car, you can't find your car, and you have no way of hunting down or figuring out how to get to where your car might be, and then you got to pay.
You know, we've talked to people who say, you know, they couldn't be told where their car was until they could name the officer who arrested them. And if they didn't have their paperwork, or the officer who went by, who in almost all cases signed their reports as agent, some name or some initial or number, if you don't know the name of your officer, you had to do a search for your car, which sometimes meant going to one or two of these locations that Jets has, or that they thought Jets has, because sometimes it's not that easy to know where it is. And sometimes those cars wound up, you know, on a lawn outside City Hall. So it became a hunt, and the longer they remain in wreckage at the wreckers facility, the more fines pile up. So the longer they're here, the more they cost to get out. And so a lot of those people just gave up on ever getting their car back.
We talked to Katie Baggett earlier. I mean, I think your story says that by the time she was really able to get her car out, the fees, including the towing fee, had reached almost $2,000 for a car she said was worth $800.
Right. So it becomes easier to just leave it alone and go away.
We had spent the day in Brookside. From the junkyard, where Katie Baggett was pulled over, to the Windy Police Station parking lot. From the entrance of the Dollar General to Jets Towing, where a passerby stopped to ask what we were doing, then angrily honked as he drove away. We had visited a family on a farm who said they were still jittery about the police. And we talked with Tasha Bishop, outside her store, who said things are much better now.
Well, thanks for a great day.
Thank you.
It's been fun to sort of see the people you talked to and the places you went, and it's as powerful as the stories. They hold up well, in a way. Let's just go back to the beginning for a second. How'd you get into journalism?
You know, when I was in like high school, middle school, teachers told me they thought I was a good writer. Very flattering, I guess. But once I went to college, I found myself in the communications department, not really knowing what the heck I was going to do. And then one day I drifted into the campus newspaper office and never left.
What school?
At UNA, North Alabama. And once I got in there and started doing work at the school paper, like, I saw that we really could, even on small things, have impact. And that was just incredibly special to me. And I think that's what kept me coming back, even though, you know, it was a lot.
you know, I mean, a series of mistakes got me here. You know, I pretty much flunked out of one school and went down to Tuscaloosa to go to school at the University of Alabama, and I had had 6 different majors, which didn't pan out, which, by the way, is a great education for journalism. And I followed this girl into the Crimson White, the student newspaper at the University of Alabama, and fell pretty much in love with both of them, and I'm stuck with both of them still. So wow. It was the first moment in my life where I started feeling like people were listening to what I had to say. And in that moment, I just knew this is what I wanted to do, and I've been doing it ever since.
This story is about a power structure in town. So talk a little bit about how you first came across Mike Jones, and what do you know of how much he's been held accountable?
Mike Jones was the police chief at Brookside, of course. Didn't know much about him when this started, other than the fact that he had moved to Brookside. And my first brush with him was when I went out to talk to people who were going to court out there, long lines of people who were going to court out there. And he came out and finally agreed to talk to me after some time of putting me off. And he just had this self-assurance that the truth is, he was the kind of person, and every reporter knows them, who will look at you and lie in your face as if he believes you're an idiot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes the best thing to do in that situation is just to let him, you know, continue to think that's true. Yeah, so we wrote the story with his direct involvement, and 2 days later, he was asked to leave or resign. He disappeared, fell off the radar, impossible to find. I mean, it's been very difficult to track down since, until he was driving through South Alabama and had not turned in his Brookside badge and flashed that badge to get out of a speeding ticket and was arrested for impersonating an officer, for which he's still awaiting trial at this time, which is a felony. But so the question of whether he got what he deserved or he paid a price for it, in some ways remains up in the air. He's named in many of the 15 lawsuits. There still are some federal agencies asking questions. We don't know where they are in that process. He did lose his job and his livelihood there, and in many ways he's paid.
So what about the town attorney? So where's Mark Parnell today, and do you think he had a role in it?
You know, in my view, there's the police chief, there's the mayor, there's the prosecutor, and there's the judge. Yeah. None of this could have happened without the cooperation of all 4 of those people.
Absolutely.
The judge had some legal problems and was banned from ever being a judge again in the state of Alabama. The police chief was run out of town, essentially, and the mayor gets a little bit of a break because he only became mayor, you know, right before this broke. And he has some plausible deniability. And when it all hit the fan, he did react quickly to say, we need help and change things at that point, in my view. The prosecutor, I mean, he was involved in every one of these cases, and some might be good and some might be bad, but it would not have happened. It could not have happened without him.
Overall, people we talked to today felt they were heard.
I've been doing this a long, long time, and I've done a lot of stuff that, you know, put people in jail or got people fired and all that stuff. But when you hear people stand up and talk about what their lives were and how important it was for them to feel like they were being heard, that somebody was listening, whoever that was, and they come to you and tell you they got their life back, you know, that is the best thing I've ever done in this long career. And I just want to ask, who could not write that story in a way that is compelling? It's a simple thing that happens when you go out and talk to people and do those things, and they write themselves sometimes.
Did you expect the results as quickly as you had? I mean, that's unbelievable.
I don't think we expected results at all.
No.
I mean, and not to the level that they rose to. Come on, if we had talked about this a week before this thing ran, that there'd be laws changed in 4 months, we would never have had that conversation, right?
I was in a bad place in some ways when we set out to do this. I mean, in just the state of journalism, all this, I mean, what are we going to do? Do we have any resonance anymore? And then to have that kind of response, it was like adrenaline. And what we learned here was that everybody has a Brookside, you know? Yeah. Whether across the country, we would get notes from people who say, this happened to me here. And we're seeing that now in stories in Texas and Louisiana and other places that have very similar stories.
One of the things I think was so powerful about the story, that it's another example about why we need local journalists, because this is a classic situation that if no one is looking, look what happens.
I lay awake a lot of nights thinking about the stuff I don't get to, you know, and that's the thing that haunts me. And it's exactly that. We've got to do a better job everywhere of covering the people closest to us.
So what makes a work worthy of a Pulitzer Prize? In describing the selection of AL.com's work, the jury called the series jaw-dropping for its uncovering of shocking, infuriating, and brazen behavior by local police officials, and for their clearly and concisely written stories supported by indisputable findings. This was a series, according to the judges, that provided a significant public service by protecting vulnerable residents and stopping an egregious abuse of power. Thank you for joining Pulitzer on the Road. We're honored to bring more attention to Pulitzer-winning work and the creators behind it. This series is a production of the Pulitzer Prize Board at Columbia University in collaboration with the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communication at Arizona State University. It is supported by a grant from the Knight Foundation. All episodes are edited for length and clarity. In future episodes, we'll hear from authors Barbara Kingsolver and Hernan Diaz. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and tell your friends to listen in. To see this work and the work of all the 2023 winners, please go to Pulitzer.org. Pulitzer on the Road is produced by Central Sound at Arizona PBS. Our producers are Anna Williams and Alex Kasorik with Arizona PBS and me. Audio engineering by Robert Disner, Alex Kasorik, and Joe Miller. Editing, promotion, and other support by Edward Clement and Pamela Casey. Fact-checking by Jessica Quesada. Pulitzer Administrator Marjorie Miller is our executive producer. I've been your guide, Nicole Carroll.